everyone, and welcome back to yet another episode of Panditri on a Pint. We are four blokes continuing our above average football conversation. Joining me on the podcast is Vaishnav, Akshat and Po. In our last episode, which was the story time part one, we heard some absolutely bizarre, insane stories from the world of football, and we are coming back now with part two to give you some more fantastical adventures, so stay tuned. If you've not heard part one, I highly recommend you do so because there's some really good content there.
Vaishnav, do you want to kick us off again?
So this story is the more fun story, okay? This story has betrayal, stupidity, fierce rivalry, Bundesliga, a guy named Daum.
Love it.
All of it, okay? It's got it all. So this, I'll set the backdrop for you, is like, I think this is late 80s Bundesliga title race. There's a new fucking hotshot on the scene. His name is, I cannot pronounce his first name, his last name is Daum, okay, D-A-U-M. And Bayern is Bayern, so they've always been dominant. So obviously he's Cologne's manager, and Cologne are doing well. He has his full crazy new style of playing and everything. But Bayern are obviously like the champs, right? And Jupp Heynckes is the coach at the time and the director of football, who until very recently was the till like 10 years ago.
Jupp Heynckes was the manager like in the 1980s also. What the fuck, bro?
He's old, bro.
The guy's ancient, bro.
Didn't he like just retire in 2017? He
might come back also interim. You never know.
bro.
Yeah. He's been around forever, okay. So this guy, Uli Hoiter or something, okay, Hoys is the director of football for Bayern. So that guy and Daum don't like each other, okay? They have beef from playing days. Like, they have beef.
Okay? I love this, bro.
They have beef. They have, like, full-on beef. They have so much beef that, and this Daum is the type of guy, like Mourinho, who says shit in press conferences and all that, okay? And he starts trash-talking Heynckes in one press conference, saying, hey, this guy's boring as fuck. Who the fuck likes to watch his football and play his football? He sucks. Like, this is, like, such a boring, dead way of playing. And out of nowhere, insults Uli, okay, saying some shit about him also. Jupp Heynckes just comes back and is like, you know, we'll see where he is at the end of the season, that type of stuff, you know, like, I'm going to win it for sure. And Cologne gets spanked, okay, 3-0. GG's, done. Now, 5 years later, a similar scene happens, but I think Daum was with Stuttgart, but he's with another team. No, yeah, Stuttgart, okay. Similar situation, trash talks Uli, trash talks, I don't think Heynckes was the coach at that time, but trash talks whoever is there, loses, okay, loses that game, loses the next game, and that because of that, Bayern wins the title, Stuttgart don't win the title, okay. Now, in 2001, okay, either European Championships, no, yeah, because 2002 was Japan World Cup, no, so 2000 Euros, Germany get knocked out, okay, they get knocked out damn early, and it's like a disgraceful performance, okay. And Uli, of course, is the director of Bayern at the time, but he serves this double role as advisor on the board for the German FA to appoint. Okay. Yeah. So now is where the intrigue and the maneuvering happens. So Uli is the dual capacity serving as his advisor, but he's also Bayern director of football. Okay. They wanted the Germany FA, most of them wanted the Bayern coach, who was the Bayern coach at the time. He was supposed to be a really good coach. I don't remember his name, but he probably is pretty famous in him, like in his own right. But whatever. Now, Uli has, you know, different agendas. He doesn't want to fuck over his club. So he starts giving Daum's name, okay? Telling, bro, take this guy. He's damn good. And now you have to understand that Daum is a very, like, Conte type. Like, he's back in your face and hectic, okay? Like, he's heavy metal. So people are like, okay, cool. If Uli is saying this, maybe there's something to it. And they start processing everything. And then he starts getting genuinely linked with the job. Now, when he gets genuinely linked with the job, no, all these is the German national team job. Pretty big deal, right? So all the tabloids around German football start publishing stuff that are like, you know, stories from his past sort of a deal. Mm-hmm. Like skeletons from his closet.
Yeah.
It's So journalists asked him a rumor of if he does any illicit drugs, okay? Another context, another backdrop is, at this time, the German national team, the German country, the German government, Europe, were on a very hardline no drugs policy. Like, this is just a government policy. It was overall, everybody was trying to, you know, us athletes, famous, you know, music singers, all the musicians or like these, you know, actors were all trying to get in these PSAs and ads. So Uli had to come out and say stuff like, didn't have to come out, he's also a little like backstabbing boy, comes out and says, oh shit, I don't know what all these rumors are, you should talk to Dom, okay, this is not good, we will not accept this from anybody linked to the national team job, okay. They go and ask Dom, what do you think about these cocaine stories and all that? And this guy's like, no, this is just the criminals and prostitutes blackmailing me, okay?
Okay.
That journalist is like, huh? And then he starts digging more, okay? He's like, this made me want to search much more. Why would you say that, okay? What criminals and prostitutes, bro? And then, then this guy starts, you know, getting... So this guy starts getting second doubts about the job, thinking, you know, there's too many, you know, there's all this bullshit news in the tabloids. I don't want to be linked to this. I don't think it's good for me. So he starts having second thoughts, okay? Then Uli goes even more hardcore down on him, like, you know, this is bullshit. He's like stagnating the pipeline and he's like a druggie. He's this, he's that. He's like sick.
This is generational hating, okay. Dude.
Bro.
Wait for it.
Because this guy was linked with the national job, the German fans liked him, okay? And he was also like a heavy, like, good, fun coach, yeah. So they started fucking burning effigies of Uli, fucking booing him whenever he was in the Bayern ground. So it got hectic, okay? Bro, this story is mad. So it gets hectic and that guy gets so hated, he becomes like underground. Like, he doesn't go to matches, he doesn't go to the director's box because the ultras are giving him too much shit, okay? So then, after he started the fire, he goes back and he starts touching base with Daum, okay? Telling bro, like, come one day, we'll meet, we'll settle the beef. So, like, so you win, I need to figure this out. And this entire time, his job with the national team is not... I think they started practice, but I'm not sure if he was actively participating as manager yet, okay? Then some fucking, this dumb fuck Daum, bro. Some random journalists, again, they're probing him for this coke stuff, okay? At one point he gets so fried, he's like, fuck it, and he's like, I'll give you a hair sample, take my hair sample, okay? This is a week before Uli and Daum are supposed to squash the beef at this conference for coaches, okay?
Uh-huh.
1 week or 2 weeks before that, this Daum is one dumb fuck. He's like, take it. He takes his hair and he gives it to them. Gets popped for coke. He gets popped for so much coke that the lab that was testing it had never seen that much being in somebody's metabolite bloodstream, okay? He broke records, bro. They were looking at it and they're like, what the fuck? Apparently, Daum thought that he hadn't used for a couple months or a couple weeks. But so he was like a chronic coke head, okay? And yeah, he thought it won't come. And he's got it tested with a third party, like testing whatever lab before he sent it to these guys. And those guys fucked up the test. They didn't do it properly. So it came false negative. Sent it to these guys. These guys are seeing like fucking. They're like, what the fuck? Bro, and then this Uli, okay, in his book, he's like, what the fuck do I do now? Now this guy's really gone and said, I don't do drugs. Give it a sample. He's got caught, okay? That's the end of the story. That's it. He gave his hair. He got caught.
Why would you try to bluff this dude? Like, this so much.
It's not just once, Ra. The first time he was asked about a Spanish property deal, sleeping with prostitutes, and cocaine habit, okay? And he was asked in a way that he could have just shot it off by saying people are saying bullshit. But he had to say the criminals and prostitutes are blackmailing me, which led to people digging more. Then he's done, okay? He could have got... He's done. All the fans are on his side. The media is also blackballing Uli. They're sort of forgetting about this coke thing. Randomly, one dude asks him again. Tilted, he gets flipped off. Says, take my fucking hair. Gives it to him. Gets busted. Bro, I read this story. I'm like... Like, how can you be this stuff? It's crazy.
What happened to Uli then? Because his name would have been tarnished, right?
No, he went to jail for tax evasion.
Oh, shit.
And we're not done. Daum and him remain friends, not friends, but acquaintances through that. And there's a quote in Daum's book where Uli has said to him, you know, you could have shat on me when I got caught for tax evasion, but you didn't do that. I really respect it.
Bro, this is like those toxic relationships that where like you're not good with each other, but you can't stay away from each other.
Yeah.
It's damn weird.
That's damn funny.
Po, do you want to go in with your next story?
Yes, please. So I'm going to take it back even further. 2nd of March, 1901, okay? So this is the day when a doggo goes missing. And it has huge, huge implications. Huge implications to football as you see it and as you know it. Yeah, a doggo goes missing, okay? So, the background to this day is 1984. We're talking about Newton Heath. They've been in the top flight for 2 years. And they get relegated to the second division of the footballing league in England. And they are struggling so bad. They keep buying new players. They make expensive mistakes. And still, they can't get back up to the top flight. And in 1900... Oh, they're still there in the second league, like second tier of English football. And there's a possibility of them going bankrupt because they've done these hordes of stupid mistakes. Okay, so they decide to start a fundraiser, organize a bazaar for like a period of days, like 2 to 3 days from 27th Feb to 2nd of March in 1901. Where they set up, like, bring in the local people and ask them to raise funds for the football club, okay? So they've set a target for £1,000.
Mm.
Back then, £1,000 is equivalent to 80,000 pounds in today's currency, okay? Today's valuation. So they failed to meet the target. The thing is, the fundraiser ends up costing more.
Oh, man.
To set up than what they got in, okay? To add misery to this, their fullback and...
Samar is just laughing.
because it reminds me of Arrested Development and those fundraisers that Tobias used to
TBD, TBD, TBD.
So, okay, to add misery to this, their fullback and captain, his name is Harry Stafford. His dog, which is lemon, which is described as lemon and white colored, okay?
Okay.
I've never seen a dog like that. And the name of the dog is called D Major. This dog goes missing, okay? So they're looking for it. I'm flipping a page, okay? Sorry. So this dog goes missing. The captain puts out an advertisement in the local newspaper, evening ad, looking for the doggo. Meanwhile, the dog has wandered around the streets of that town. I won't name it yet. It's gone around the town and ended up at a restaurant, okay? And this the owner of this restaurant is a wealthy local brewer and like a businessman. His name's John Henry Davis. He apparently starts liking the dog too much and he wants to gift the dog to his daughter, who's about to be 12 years old and her birthday is coming up soon. So he wants to give the dog to her. And he reaches out because he's seen the ad, reaches out to Harry Stafford and says, dude, I want your dog. I don't mind paying as much as you want. And the first time he rejects it, he comes back with a second bid for the dog. And this dude, he knows his club is like going bankrupt as fuck. So he's like, okay, fine, I'll take it. And like he sells the dog and this is in time, right in time.
And then there was a Fabrizio, here we go.
Okay. So since these two guys get close, so they decide to help the club and along with two other investors, they pump in money to the club and try to get it out. This particular scenario wherein all this happens and... In 7 years period from the date the dog goes missing, the club, which is in second division, ends up winning the top flight league. And as you know, it's Manchester United. The name was changed in 1902. And this is the story of how that dog saved United from financial crisis.
Oh, doggies are the best. Bro.
Nice.
The major.
Yeah. I love doggos. No, nice story, po. Fuck, I didn't know this.
Genuinely educational also. That was a good story.
Yeah.
Oh, credits go to Abhi, by the way. He's the one who pointed me towards this story.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Shout out to Abhi. Okay, so moving ahead, I have the story of the Maverick manager in Neil Warnock. And this is going to be two very short stories just to give you an idea of what kind of a manager Neil Warnock was, right? So my first story is about Neil Warnock playing the FA Cup fourth round. The game is set against Wolves. And just for some backdrop for listeners who don't know, Neil Warnock is probably like one of the most famous English managers just because he's managed till he was 74 and like 1,060 games or something like that. It's an obscene amount. So like he's very, very well known in especially the British footballing culture. Okay. Now his team are playing a cup tie in the FA Cup fourth round against Wolves. And it's going to be a tight game. But Warnock's wife wakes up one morning and tells Warnock that I had a dream that a right back is going to decide the game. So Warnock says, okay, noted. Now Warnock goes into the dressing room on the day of the game to give his pre-match talk. And the first thing he says is, my wife has had a dream that a right back is going to decide the game. Now, the players say this, okay? Some of the players who were playing at that time, they're like, we all were dead serious because we knew, like, this guy is not fucking around. Like, he's taken this to his heart and he's going to do something about this. But what he did, nobody expected. So, Warnock took his wife's prediction so strongly that he started Danny Butterfield, who was their second choice right back, as a striker. Okay? Because he did not want to drop their first choice right back, which was Nathaniel Clyne. But he knew a right back is going to decide the game, so he's like, why not? So he started Danny Butterfield, who wasn't even playing like that regularly in the first team, as a striker. And the players are like, what the fuck are you doing? And he's like, no, I'm going to follow this intuition. Danny Butterfield scores a perfect hat-trick in 13 minutes.
That's insane.
Left foot, right foot header. And
oh my god.
And they win the game.
I mean, his wife is goated, dude. Like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this is Neil Warnock, the tactician. Okay. Now, I'm going to talk about Neil Warnock, the businessman. Okay. So, Neil Warnock was managing QPR. And they traveled to Cornwall for a preseason game. Okay. And, like, QPR, fairly competitive team. Now, at the game at Cornwall, a 14-year-old rolls up, okay? 14-year-old comes with his dad. And all the players are like, who is this guy? And Warnock is like, no, no, don't worry about it. When the game about to start, in his pre-match talk, he says that I've found this wonder kid, 14 years old, and we're going to give him a punt, 20 minutes. He's going to play the last 20 minutes of the game. And the players are like, okay, fine. Like, this guy's anyways a flip guy. He might have seen something we don't know. And it's anyways a friendly game. The game starts 70th minute. This 14-year-old kid is bought on. The 14-year-old kid is absolute dog shit. like, the worst possible player. Nowhere close to the standards of, like, elite professional football. And he is fucked up majorly, okay, repeatedly. So, like, the players are like, okay, this might have been a trial that's gone wrong. It happens to a lot of players and all that. Like, not everyone are cut out for it. But later, the players and, like, the story comes out that kid's father was actually designing Warnock's house. He was the interior designer. And Warnock, instead of paying the designer, promised him 20 minutes in a preseason game for his 14-year-old kid. Who wanted to play football.
What a bro. Guy, dude. What a guy.
Bro, you...
He saved his...
Bro. Bro.
What a dad also. What a dad, dude.
Bro.
I love bro. Him.
Yeah, what a dad. What a dad. Yeah.
Dad knew where it's at, bro. He thought he has an Mbappe down the line. He's shooting a shot.
Oh, it's too good.
Oh, do you want to go ahead and give us your last story of the night?
Yeah, okay. So let's move it around a bit King Julian style because we're going to Madagascar 21 years ago.
Po is on fire today, bro.
He's written down that intro for the story, bro. I guarantee
definitely
man,
not. It's not there.
He has
it's not there,
it in front of the mirror. This guy.
I've practiced it, but I haven't written it down.
You nailed it, bro. You nailed it.
Bro, the way he flipped that page, bro, it just caught me so off guard. Okay, Po, let's go.
So this is 21 years ago, and this is a rivalry that's going on for a long while between two teams called AS Adema and, sorry if I'm going to butcher this, Stade Olympique de la Amiens. So okay, I'm going to call it SOE, abbreviated. Okay?
SOE.
Throughout
yes.
this story, I'm going to call it SOE. So it's much easier. So SOE are the reigning Madagascar champions, and the league back then was called THB Champions League, standing for Three Horses Beer Champions League. Okay, so this was before they changed the name.
Bro, Madagascar is cool outside the movie also. Like, this is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, this is sponsorship naming. So THB, okay? So they have a four team round robin style finale to the league, like I think similar to what we have in the IPL right now. So they've reached that particular stage of the league, and they've done well outside the league as well. Okay, they've gone to the second round, like the second stage of the African Champions League. And this is similar to every other inter-country league, wherein like the home and the away tie are decided and all. No, but this is amidst the near civil war in Madagascar. So they've played both the fixtures in Angola, and they've still managed to beat them, and then gone through to the next stage, and they've done pretty well for in that year. So it's been a remarkable year for them, and they're on course to retain the title. So the thing is, their fiercest rivals, Adema, the fixtures are such that they end up playing them in the last of the four round robin game, like the fixtures. So it's teed up in such a way that if they win the remaining two games, they can the decider will be the last game in that the last four fixtures, and they can like possibly lift the title back then. So it's a dream finish. So the penultimate game is happening against the team called DSA Antananarivo. So sorry, completely butchered it. I'm not going to take the names of the players or the coaches because I definitely can't pronounce them.
Okay? We'll call them King Julian, Gloria, Alex,
the four penguins,
the penguin skipper,
private captain Kowalski,
yeah.
Skipper, bring it. Okay, so this is the penultimate game, and they're leading 2-1 up till the ending, like the last few minutes. But there's a controversial penalty given to the opposite team, and the game ends up in a draw. And this ensures that their fiercest rivals end up winning the league regardless of what happens in the final fixture. So these guys are damn pissed at the refereeing body, and they start like staging protests and shit.
Yeah.
And they still go to the final game, which is 1 week away, and they're still damn pissed about it. So the most bizarre circumstances occur where in the 90-minute game, the score ends up as 149-0.
Bro,
that's awesome.
This happens because SOE have taken it upon themselves to furiously score own goals one after the other and not let the champions elect Adema to touch the ball. And the referee has not done anything to stop the game.
That is
so
petty.
To score 149 goals, the rate at which you need to score is one goal in every 36 seconds. So imagine how furious.
But the dedication to do it for 90 minutes straight, bro. Like, after the first five, I would have got the point. But they're like, no, I'm going to score 144 more.
No. This fast continues, and like the referee hasn't stopped the game. So after the game, like the footballing association body is damn pissed at them. So they've banned the coach for a full 3 years,
man,
to any stadium. He can't play any game.
Wait, Po, this was 149 own goals or 149 like goals that the other team didn't contest?
Oh, no. The champions elect have barely touched the ball, because they score an own goal, they restart, they go back to their own goal, score
another.
But this
is super interesting, because the stat line would be zero shots, 1% possession, 149 goals scored. That would be so fucking cool.
Yeah.
This is petty at the highest level. Love it. Okay, so the captain, the coach, and a few others have been banned. And like Madagascar have a few friendlies to play for their national team. And they've uplifted the ban after 3 games. And then they've recalled the players that were banned. And the story is just like covered up after that.
This sounds like something the Penguins would come up with, dude.
Kowalski analysis.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, it's time for Akshat's final story time.
Akshat's final story time, which I've heard is an absolute banger.
So, I apologize in advance, okay? Because this started off as a football story time, but what I uncovered by following Wikipedia links is something like way, way bigger than football. So this is not going to be very football related, okay? But I found it really cool.
Okay.
My question to the two of you is this. Do you want to represent a national football team?
If I can play, then definitely, yeah.
Yes.
I can make that happen for you.
Man, what is this kind of proposition you're putting down at 1 p.m. in the night? 1 a.m. in the morning, sorry.
Akshat is selling us a pyramid scheme, I feel, bro. This is how they all start.
Do you want to play? Bro, doesn't this sound like U.S. military recruiting teenagers for their like endeavors? Being like, bro, I can get you in, man. Just come on, sign up here.
Yeah.
See, very similarly, I'll say that it is a fully voluntary service, okay? So, this is a place, I should say, which is called the Principality of Sealand. Okay. Now, the football team, the 11 people on the pitch, consists of 550% of the population of the entire country.
What? 500?
That country...
How is that possible?
...has a population of 2.
What?
Yeah.
Sealand.
I'm telling you, I started reading this and my mind was blown, okay? So, there's this place just off the coast of England, which was originally called HM Fort Ruffs or Rose or whatever, okay? This was built in World War II as a naval fort. And I'm saying fort, but it's not really. Like, just imagine in the middle of like the ocean, of the sea, there are two like concrete, huge cylindrical columns. And there's like this flat kind of a platform on it. And what they used to do is they used to put anti-air guns over there to protect Britain from the German like the Air Force which were coming to bomb Britain during those days, okay? Now, after the war, after everything got over, right? In 1967, a former major who turned into a pirate radio entrepreneur, a man by the name of Roy Bates, absolute legend, takes his wife and 2 kids to that fort and declares independence and decides to call it the Principality of Sealand.
Just to give context, this is because England recognizes BBC as the only radio network and they won't give anybody else the opportunity to do it.
Yeah. So, yeah, pirate radio is a huge thing back then. So he initially thought this was going to be like a base for his pirate radio station, but he just declared independence and he called it the Principality of Sealand. And it's his. He's the royal family. It starts with him. And he has his 2 kids. They're the princes of Sealand. Right? Now, there's a lot of crazy shit which happened. Just 1 year later, there were some boats which were coming towards this fort. And this dude and his son apparently started shooting revolvers at these boats because it was an invasion attempt. They were taken and they were...
An act of war.
Yeah. And they were taken and they were tried... you know, people tried... Like, basically tried to sue them or take them to court. And the British court said that this actually falls outside our jurisdiction. So we can't do anything about it. And that emboldened them even more. And they were like, okay, yeah, I'm done now. Now, this is for sure. This is now its own country, right? In 1978, bro, there was a coup attempt. So there was a German businessman who was the friend of this Roy Bates, okay? He was... His official title was the Minister of External Affairs of Sealand. So this guy, he got like a few of his boats and literally tried to take over that Sealand, okay? Because he knew that he could sell it for a lot. He took his son, the prince, hostage on that small little platform over there. This place is not even half a football pitch long, like big, okay? But he decides he's going to take it. This led to a rescue attempt where this Roy Bates dude flew in on a helicopter ridden by a James Bond stuntman. All of this happened. He got that guy arrested and they survived the coup attempt. And the Principality of Sealand managed to stay sovereign, okay?
Fuck.
Basically, it's a one-man army who stopped the coup.
Two-man.
Because there's only one guy.
Two-man, bro. The James Bond stuntman and the king of Sealand. But there is football involved. I'm coming to the football side of it. But like, it's an amazing history of like how what this place is, how it was formed. And in like the early 2000s, people got to know a little bit more about the story. And this dude, like the son now who has become the king, he decided that he wants to form a professional team to represent Sealand to gain publicity, but also like it's like fun. It's a good thing to do. Like my country should have
why not?
Yeah. So in 2003, Christian Olsen, a Danish hotel manager, became the first manager of the Sealand national football team. So what he did is he convinced an over 40s team, there's a term called over 40s football also, in the Danish fifth tier, and he convinced them to represent Sealand. So that became Sealand's first official football team.
Oof.
Now, there's a lot more to this story, okay? But apparently, all these micronations and all of these like places which are not really like considered as countries can't be officially brought into FIFA. So they have formed their own association called NV FIFA or something like that. I'm not getting the name right. Who organizes their own tournaments and organizes like their own World Cup in quotes.
Hey, nice.
Yeah.
Their own small little community. There's,
exactly. And just to tell you like some of the examples of who this team Sealand has faced is the Tamil Eelam army or something. Ooh. Which is like some Sri Lankans who have moved to Canada. Yeah. There are some there's a thing called Punjab, bro, which are just Punjabis who are living in UK. There's, but I'm going to move a little bit forward to them trying to organize their first official match. So they had matches with like these small teams and here and there before, but they want to organize an actual official match, right? So the manager who was in charge, he basically found out about this team on the internet and he just showed interest in like being the manager and they let him be the manager. So the team they chose were the Chagosians or the from Chagos Island. They also have a trip history, bro. I went on a deep rabbit hole in Wikipedia, bro. But basically they were they were part of some island. They were forced to move from that island from the UK Navy because they wanted to build a naval base for the US. So they were just like given UK passports and those guys became like one... another micronation in UK, okay? So, the first international friendly was finally finished. There was a mix of, like, celebrities and ex, like, fourth league players and all that. It was very nice. They had, like, reporters involved who took an interest in the story. The way I'm going to end this story is, I think, one of the most beautiful puns I have ever read, okay? They were down 2-0 at halftime. And they lost the game 3-1, okay? But it was fun and everyone had fun. They had a national anthem, everything, okay? But one of the reporters, he summed up the entire match with this wonderful line. He says, "For a fortress nation, Sealand had a surprisingly leaky defense."
Fuck, that was brilliant. Man, I've seen this fort that you're talking about. Like, I think just last week I've seen it on social media where I think one of those popular pages, Nas Daily or someone on the, like one of those guys, have put up, like have gone there and then shown footage of Sea Lion. There's actually a prison cell that they have. It's just one single cell, and they've had prisoners of war before. They've had German emissaries come and then try to get those prisoners out of the cell. The fuck? And like they have their own passport.
Bro, I have given you like the smallest.
They have their own passport. And even though the UK does not recognize them as an official country, they're like, fuck it. Like they can't do shit because we're in international waters and they don't have any jurisdiction here. So they're living the life.
But like, how do they make money?
So what they do is they have a website. So they have this website. So there's tourism. So they allow people to come and see it. So that's one aspect. Donations is one aspect. And they have this website where it's one of those, you know, those things like, oh, do you want to be called a lord? Pay like £500 and we'll officially make you lord of this.
I've seen this.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is like this near Scotland, right?
Yeah, no. So Scotland also does it, but these guys also have a version of that. So they use
Send you like a part of the land and you'll be like a... And they'll give you a certificate and stuff.
Yes.
Oh, that's pretty cool, bro.
Yeah, I'm just going to add one more badass thing, which I didn't include, but it's too funny. So in somewhere in the 1960s or 1970s, the United Nations came up with like this rule that around 12 or 16 nautical miles around your coast is officially your territory. Okay. So England tried to enforce that and say that now these guys are officially part of England. You know what these guys did?
They moved the fort.
England are part of us.
Yeah, they enforced it too.
Holy fuck. <Yeah. laughs> Checkmate.
Yeah. So yeah, I love these guys. But the where we are today is that they don't have a national team that's officially been disbanded. And all it took for the last time for a team to be formed is just interest. So legit, if you are able to reach out to this Michael Bates or whatever that son's name, whoever the current king of Sealand is, and you have an interesting enough story, you can actually get that done. You can actually form a team and represent Sealand.
Nice.
Oh, that's mad, bro. Let's do it.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I've seen the clips where like you have to struggle to get to that fortress. So I'm out, bro. It's horrible. It's in the middle of nowhere.
It's not that far from England, bro. But
dude, all you can see in the horizon is water everywhere. So it's bang in the middle. There's nothing. There are two pillars, as Akshat said, and one platform on top. That's it. And then the pillars apparently are where the rooms are, right? So basically they have like tourism, as you said, like they have like a hotel there, like, and like many people can stay inside the pillar. So it's all fancy and shit.
Oh yeah. That was pretty cool. Let's close this episode off. Thank you, listeners, for getting to the end. And if you have your own set of bizarre stories, message us on Twitter. Our handle is Pandit3 on a Pint. We will catch you very soon again. Bye-bye.